Welcome to this audio issue of Distressed Investing, published and copyrighted by Porter & Company, all rights reserved. Please note that this recording was generated via AI and may contain minor transcription errors and pronunciation mistakes. Throughout this issue, I may reference charts, graphs, and imagery that can only be viewed on our website at porterandcompanyresearch.com. This issue was originally published on October 9, 2025. A Second Life for an American Icon. The Superpower of Low-Priced Bonds. This company is a survivor, not a Jeopardy question. The downside, if this fabled brand does not pull off its second act, if things don't go as well as planned, your principal will be intact. Martin Fridson. You stole my graphic user interface. It was 1979, and the rivalry between Apple founder Steve Jobs and Microsoft's Bill Gates was just beginning when Jobs made this accusation against Gates. We both had this rich neighbor named Xerox, and I broke into his house to steal the TV set, but I found out that you had already stolen it, Gates replied. The Palo Alto Research Center Park at Xerox was a hub of innovation in the 1970s, a place where brilliant minds were sketching out the future of computing. Among their many groundbreaking developments was the graphical user interface, GUI, a revolutionary concept that replaced cryptic command lines with intuitive icons, windows, and a mouse. It was a paradigm shift, a way to make computers accessible to everyone, not just programmers. But Xerox, despite its technological prowess, failed to recognize the immense commercial potential of what it had created. In 1979, Jobs, an ambitious innovator, ever on the hunt for the next big thing, visited Park because he had heard of the great things happening there. He and his team were granted a privileged look behind the curtain, and what they saw there, the Alto computer, with its mouse-driven GUI, left Jobs utterly captivated. He immediately grasped the profound implications of this technology. "Why aren't you doing anything with this?" he reportedly asked the Xerox researchers, bewildered by their apparent lack of urgency. Jobs saw a future where computers weren't just for specialists. He saw a computer on every desk, and the GUI was the key to unlocking that vision. Apple, already working on its next-generation computers, pivoted hard. The ideas gleaned from Park became the bedrock of the Lisa, and then, more famously, the Macintosh. Meanwhile, a young Bill Gates was building his own empire at Microsoft, and a rivalry between Gates and Jobs had begun. While Jobs was directly inspired by Park, Gates' journey to the GUI was somewhat different, yet equally pivotal. Microsoft had initially focused on operating systems for IBM PCs, which were still text-based. However, the burgeoning success of the Macintosh and the clear direction of the industry toward graphical interfaces did not escape Gates' notice. Microsoft's response was Windows, the operating system it first released in 1985. It wasn't an immediate hit, and many critics derided it as a pale imitation of the Mac. Yet Gates possessed an uncanny ability to learn, adapt, and scale. He understood the strategic importance of making a graphical operating system widely available and compatible with the vast ecosystem of IBM-compatible PCs. Xerox, the originator of the technology, remained largely on the sidelines, its executives famously unable to see the value in the technology they had created. They viewed Park's innovations as too radical, too expensive, or simply not aligned with their core business of photocopiers. After all, beginning in the 1960s, the company had become the undisputed leaders in the burgeoning technology of making photocopying equipment, doing business in 170 countries. And for more than two decades, revenue increased, it controlled the majority of copy machine market share, and its stock price mostly rose. Until the late 1990s, when competition and technology shrank the need for copiers and ate into Xerox's market share. Half-price sale on Xerox bond. In this report, we write about a half-price sale on a Xerox Holdings NASDAQ XRX 3.75% bond maturing March 15, 2030, at the current price of $470 per $1,000 face value. Its annual yield is roughly 23.3%. The bonds have fallen from around $800 in January because of disappointing earnings for the quarters that ended December 31, 2024, and March 31, 2025. In addition, Xerox had to pay extremely high interest rates when it raised $800 million at the depths of the tariff-related market panic of late March. Though this high-cost debt spooked investors, it was used to fund the purchase of a business we believe will provide long-term benefits to the company. Investors are concerned that the company's main copier business is on the wrong side of history and condemned to permanent decline. This report will explain how Xerox is reinventing itself. We believe the company will be a survivor more like IBM, whose former printer business, Lexmark, Xerox recently purchased, than Eastman Kodak, a once great business that became a high-dollar Jeopardy question. A long and rich history. In 1906, Joseph R. Wilson founded Holoid Corporation, a manufacturer of photographic paper, in Rochester, New York. Eastman Kodak, which produced cameras and film, was founded there a decade earlier. The company prospered, opening offices in New York, Boston, and Chicago. To protect its market share, in 1933, Holoid introduced an advanced type of photographic paper that helped the company survive the Great Depression. In 1934, Holoid acquired one of its customers, Rictograph Corporation, a maker of photocopiers, then essentially very large cameras that photographed documents that then needed to be developed on photographic paper. As part of the acquisition, Holoid gained a young engineer named John H. Dessauer, known as Hans, who would ultimately preside over one of the greatest business successes of the 20th century. He also wrote a terrific history of the company entitled My Years with Xerox, The Billions Nobody Wanted. To raise money to expand the business, Holoid issued shares to the public in 1936. Around the same time, a young patent attorney named Chester Carlson was tinkering in his small laboratory in Astoria, Queens, and came up with a process of dry copying. It involved using an electrostatic process to spread dry ink, what we think of as toner, on paper. The process was called xerography, based on the Greek words for dry and writing. Carlson spent years trying unsuccessfully to license his technology. Finally, in 1947, Holoid agreed to license Carlson's xerographic technology in exchange for a royalty based on copier sales. In 1950, Holoid unveiled the manually operated Xerox Model A copier. Model A flopped. The founder's son, Joseph C. Wilson, soldiered on. Seeing the intrinsic value in the technology, he was willing to go all in on Xerox copiers. Reflecting its evolving focus, in 1958, the company changed its name to Holoid Xerox, and in February 1960 it introduced its 914 model, a fully automated copier that used standard office paper. Responding to questions from regulators about whether Xerox's claims about plain office paper were true, the company sent its response copied onto a brown paper bag. The gambit worked. The 914 represented a giant leap forward from offset printing and mimeograph machines that required ink and either plates or stencils. It proved to be one of the most, many say the single most, successful new product launches of the 20th century. Within 6 months, the company reached its 10-year sales goal. Its novelty gave rise to one of the best-known commercials of the period, "So Simple a Monkey Can Do It." It's hard to overstate the impact of this new machine with the public at large. To Xerox, something joined Kleenex, Jell-O, Band-Aids, Thermos, and Aspirin as brand names that came to stand for their product category. By 1961, the company's name was shortened to Xerox Corporation. The company would go on to introduce additional trailblazing products. In 1966, Xerox unveiled its 2400 model duplicator, which combined a copier with an automated paper feeder, a collator, and a stapler. The model was named for its printing speed of 2400 copies per hour. For instance, in that time, the Xerox 2400 could make 60 copies of a 40-page document, separated and stapled neatly. In essence, this was a miniature publishing center incorporated into a single machine. The Xerox 9700, introduced in 1977, featured commercial-grade laser printing that could replicate logos and other graphics in sharp detail. The 9700 was designed for data processing centers and similar extremely high-volume uses. In 1990, Xerox introduced its DownTech 135, which combined a scanner, laser imaging, and copying. Within 10 years, most commercial printing in the United States took place on the 135 system. As sales of Xerox machines skyrocketed beginning in the 1960s, so did the company's stock price. In 1950, Holoid shares fetched about 25 cents, on a split-adjusted basis. By 1966, shares had risen 1,000-fold to $250. Every $1,000 invested in 1950 was worth $1 million by the mid-1960s. Here is what stock's appreciation in its first three decades looks like on a logarithmic scale. Xerox management opted to focus on product development and U.S. sales and to find partners to help it expand internationally. In 1956, the company entered a joint venture with the Rank Organization, a large UK-based conglomerate, to manufacture and market Xerox products in Europe, Africa, and Asia. In 1962, the company signed a similar agreement with Fujifilm, in which Xerox would provide use of its technology and patents. Fuji would help design, build, and sell Xerox-branded copiers in Japan and certain other parts of Asia. In 1970, Xerox created the Palo Alto Research Center, which developed, as outlined earlier, the first GUI, the software that allowed people without coding knowledge to use computers. In 1974, Park developed Alto, the first desktop computer. Xerox researchers developed the computer mouse, as well as Ethernet networking, which enables computers to connect with the internet. Then, after visiting Park twice, Apple's Steve Jobs, with approval, incorporated much of what he learned about GUIs into his Lisa and Macintosh computers in the early 1980s. Jobs, whose Apple business benefited greatly from the GUI technology, would later say that if Xerox had taken advantage of its discoveries at Park, it could have been as big as IBM and Microsoft and Xerox combined, and the largest technology company in the world. Becoming part of the Nifty 50. In the late 1960s and early 1970s, Xerox was one of the Nifty 50 blue-chip stocks every investment manager and individual investor needed to own. The basic concept was that the market share, scale, and financial strength of the top 50 companies would enable them to grow faster than their competitors, justifying far above average price-to-earnings, P/E, ratios. The stocks of companies like Eastman Kodak, IBM, and Xerox were bid up to then dizzying, and still high, levels of 50x earnings. They fell hard during the 1974 to 1975 market sell-off and the bear market that continued through August 1982. Although these stocks recovered in the bull market of the 1980s and 1990s, they never again traded at equally large premiums to market multiples. As technology evolved in the decades that followed, these three celebrated companies faced rapidly escalating competitive pressure. IBM was able to innovate and evolve by bulking up its service business, although not without difficulties. Eastman Kodak developed the first digital camera but was afraid of cannibalizing its massive profits from selling film and photo development franchises until digital cameras made by Japanese competitors came along anyway and did it for them. Judging by its share and bond prices, we believe there are grounds for optimism when it comes to Xerox. Xerox's reversal of fortune. Xerox shareholders have reason to be frustrated. They've had a rough quarter century. Xerox earned $12.96 per share in 1998, when XRX share price for the year averaged $156.13. The company earned 97 cents per share in 2024 and its stock price averaged $8.57. It's currently trading at $3.63 per share. While there are many reasons for this long-term decline, we consider the following five factors to be the most significant. A victim of its own success. As mentioned, demand for the Xerox 914 exceeded anyone's wildest expectations. Above all, the company needed to expand its sales force rapidly. Before long, the sales department was calling the shots at Xerox and was more obsessed with current sales than expanding the company's product offerings. This nearsightedness ultimately led to the missed opportunities that Steve Jobs observed. Antitrust litigation leads to loss of market share. The U.S. government kneecapped Xerox. The company had always invested heavily in the research and development, R&D, needed to maintain its market leadership in office copiers. By the late 1960s, the company held more than 2,000 patents related to xerography and its market share in the U.S. approached 95%. Xerox famously sued IBM for patent infringement when the computer giant introduced its first plain paper copier in 1970. 2 years later, as that litigation was proceeding, the Federal Trade Commission, FTC, sued Xerox, alleging that the company was monopolizing the copier market. There was some merit to this claim, and in 1975 the two sides reached a settlement known as a consent decree. The FTC insisted on extraordinary and harsh terms that decimated Xerox's market share. The consent decree required that Xerox make virtually all of its patents, blueprints, and drawings available free to competitors. In other words, Xerox was forced to paint footsteps on the floor for its competitors. Japanese manufacturers, Canon, Minolta, Kanaka, and others, became the main beneficiaries of the FTC's consent decree. Before long, these companies underpriced Xerox, and within 4 years its market share for copiers fell to less than 14%. Less need for printing and copying. Xerox has also been hurt by declining demand for copying and printing. Beginning in the early 2000s, it became simple to send and read documents digitally, no copies needed. Improvements in communication since then, including faster computers, faster internet, and video conferencing, have accelerated the trend. Xerox sees the market for copiers and managed print services, managing document flow for businesses, declining 1% per year through 2028. Efforts to diversify yield bad results. As growth in copier and print services markets slowed in the 1980s, Xerox's management sought to develop additional sources of revenue. This effort led to a variety of costly bad decisions. Xerox expanded into financial services in 1983, when it acquired Crum & Forster, a venerable property and casualty insurer, for $1.6 billion. Over the remainder of the decade, the company added numerous smaller insurance companies and an investment bank. Financial services and the production, sales, and service of copiers required different skill sets, and Xerox's executive team was unable to manage both successfully. By the late 1990s, the company sold these investments at a loss of roughly $2 billion. Complications in building revenue from IT and related services. When Xerox introduced the wildly successful 914, it received additional income from system design and installation services for its corporate customers. Xerox would take over a customer's copy center for an additional fee. Over time, Xerox expanded this business process outsourcing, BPO, segment by offering to install, operate, and service a wider range of office technology. In 2009, Xerox took a major step to build this business and reduce its dependence on copier sales and service by acquiring Affiliated Computer Services, a top-tier BPO business. Affiliated took over functions that included human resources, payment processing, accounting and finance, and served a customer base made up of large corporations and governments. The company paid Affiliated Computer Services shareholders $6.4 billion, made up of roughly 30% cash and the balance in Xerox stock. The transaction raised Xerox's share count from 214 million to 347 million. As a result of this large increase in shares, Xerox would later be pressured by activist investors to buy back its shares in the market. Between 2012 and 2023, the company spent roughly $5.5 billion to buy back these shares and 90 million more. This equates to buying back stock at an average price around $24.50 per share, as compared with the current share price of $3.63 per share. Enter Carl Icahn. The hard-nosed activist investor Carl Icahn acquired roughly 7% of Xerox's stock in 2015. As was his habit, he immediately threatened to remove Xerox's senior management. The core of Icahn's argument was that Xerox's stock price didn't reflect the true value of the BPO business, Affiliated Computer Services, and Xerox's pre-existing outsourcing business, which would be more highly valued as a separate company. After some negotiating, and to save their jobs, Xerox's leaders granted Icahn 3 seats on the company's 9-person board of directors. As a result of his pressure, Xerox spun off the BPO business into a new company named Conduent, which was distributed to Xerox shareholders. The company was once again almost entirely dependent on the copier sales and service business. In January 2018, Fuji, which owned 75% of the Fuji-Xerox joint venture mentioned earlier, proposed a complicated merger transaction that would result in Fuji owning a controlling interest in Xerox. Management teams of both companies believe the combination would reduce costs by $1.7 billion per year and create a strong worldwide competitor in printing technology and document services. Xerox valued the package of cash and stock shareholders would receive at roughly $32 per share. But Icahn, along with Darwin Deason, who owned about 6% of Xerox stock he received when he sold Affiliated Computer to Xerox, insisted the company was worth at least $40 per share. They sued to block the Fuji transaction. In May 2018, the two sides reached an agreement. CEO Jeffrey Jacobson would resign and be replaced by John Visentin, who consulted with Icahn in his battle against Xerox. The 6 non-Icahn directors would resign, leaving Icahn with board control. The new board canceled the agreement to sell control to Fuji, which then sued Xerox for breach of contract and $1 billion in damages. In November 2019, Xerox and Fuji settled this lawsuit. Xerox agreed to sell its 25% interest in Fuji Xerox for $2.3 billion, while Fuji agreed to drop its claims against Xerox. This unwinding of the Fuji-Xerox joint venture meant that Xerox lost access to a significant part of its product line and to the R&D that the joint venture had produced. The result was fewer new product introductions. Xerox also lost valuable distribution in Asia, where Fuji-Xerox had sold every copier and service contract since 1962. Carl Icahn wanted Xerox to buy printer maker HP, formerly Hewlett-Packard, in which he also owned shares. This led to Xerox offering to pay $22 per horsepower share, but that company's management was not interested in selling. In February 2020, Xerox raised its offer to $24 per share. More significantly, it went around HP's board and offered the deal directly to shareholders, a risky strategy that rarely works. Before all the wrangling was done, Xerox abandoned its bid for HP on March 30, 2020, amidst a developing global pandemic and stock market turmoil. In the end, there was no $40 per share offer for Xerox. Icahn's 5-year effort turned out to be a foolish waste of time, a failed corporate transaction, years of management distraction, and a return to total dependence on the problematic copier business. To paraphrase William Shakespeare, it was a tale full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. Something would have to change for the better for Xerox. Xerox needs to reinvent itself. In November 2023, Xerox announced its reinvention strategy, a comprehensive, 3-year program to make the company run more efficiently and profitably. The key goals of this effort are to simplify the business, reassess which global markets merit direct sales coverage and which would be better served by partnering with local distribution, streamline product offerings and use AI-based models to determine optimal pricing, simplify the organization's reporting structure to improve productivity and reduce overhead, reposition the business for growth, increase market share by emphasizing sales of core products and print services, focus on selling additional IT and document management services to the current customer base of 200,000 businesses worldwide. Financial goals: increase profitability by shifting resources to high-growth markets, increase operating profit by at least $300 million annually by the end of 2026. Dedicate cash flow to reducing debt. The company is near the halfway point in the reinvention process. Thus far, management has divested certain non-core assets such as its Research Center of Canada. Reorganize sales by business unit rather than by geography. Announce 2 acquisitions, Itzavi and Lexmark, that are likely to increase the ultimate benefits of the reinvention process. In October 2024, Xerox agreed to acquire Itzavi, which provides IT services, for example, networking, cloud migration, and other technology-based systems, to a growing client base in the US, Canada, and the UK. The company was founded in 2004 and is headquartered in Oak Brook, Illinois. Xerox is paying $400 million for the business, made up of $180 million in cash and $220 million in loans from the selling private equity firm, GenNX360 Capital Partners. Itzavi will double Xerox's revenue from technology-based services and provide additional services to cross-sell to Xerox's current customer base. While the company did not provide specific financial details, management indicated that the purchase would have an immediate and positive effect on the company's earnings and cash flow. Lexmark. In December 2024, Xerox announced an agreement to acquire Lexmark, a worldwide manufacturer and marketer of printers and related supplies, from Apex Technology, a private investment firm. Lexmark was originally the information products division of IBM, which spun it off in 1991. Xerox is paying $1.5 billion, which equates to a sensible 4.7x Lexmark's operating profit of $318 million in 2024. Management expects the acquisition to increase Xerox's earnings and cash flow from the outset. The combination was completed July 1st and Lexmark will be included in Xerox's results beginning in Q3 2025. The combination with Lexmark will help address the main gaps created when the Fuji Xerox joint venture was terminated in 2019. Specifically, Lexmark will widen Xerox's product line and will provide a shot in the arm to its research and development effort. Xerox will also benefit from Lexmark's strong distribution network in Asia. This was arguably the most significant hole created when the Fuji Xerox collaboration was terminated. The two companies were working together before the acquisition. In 2021, Xerox and Lexmark each outsourced a portion of their business to the other to drive economies of scale. As mentioned, Xerox provides repair services for Lexmark equipment and Lexmark manufactures Xerox's large-size copiers. Combined, the business will generate 72% of its revenue from supplies, parts, and IT services. These segments typically have wider profit margins than equipment sales, which will represent only 28% of revenue. Together, Xerox and Lexmark sell equipment and IT services to more than 200,000 clients located in 170 countries. This large customer base creates an opportunity for cross-selling managed print and IT services to each other's customers. Reducing costs. The combination of Xerox and Lexmark will bring many of the same revenue and cost-saving opportunities that the purchase of HP would have provided. Xerox estimates it will be able to cut annual expenses by $200 million within 2 years. It projects that it will achieve roughly half of the savings in the first year and the balance in the following. Operating results for 2025 will only include a half year of savings. It expects to generate savings in several parts of the business. Financials. Xerox is purchasing Lexmark at 4.7x operating profit. The transaction will reduce Xerox's total debt ratio from 6.0x operating profit for the last 12 months to 5.4x. The company projects that once it achieves $200 million in savings from the merger, total debt will equate to 4.4x operating profit. Management also intends to dedicate most of the cash flow it generates toward paying down debt. It's targeting total debt of 3.0x operating profit within a few years. Toward this end, Xerox halved its annual dividend to 50 cents from $1 last October and cut it again to 10 cents per share this past March. These reductions increase cash flow by roughly $110 million per year. Accounting for the purchase of Lexmark, Xerox has $4.7 billion in bonds and loans, plus $300 million in cash. Approximately $1.7 billion of this debt is associated with the company's financing business, Xerox Financial Services, XFS. These borrowings are backed by $1.8 billion of equipment loans and leases. Xerox has recently agreed to outsource future equipment loans and leases to Delage London, the largest provider of vendor financing in the U.S. This means that as the cash comes in on the existing loans and leases, it will not need to be reinvested and can be used to pay down the XFS debt. If we exclude the debt associated with XFS, which eventually will be paid off from proceeds of the equipment loans and leases, core debt is reduced to $2.8 billion, adjusted for cash. There are solid arguments for making this adjustment. Viewing Xerox from this perspective, its credit statistics are stronger. Liquidity. For the 12 months ending June 30, Xerox's operating profit, adjusted to include the results for Lexmark over the same period, covered interest expense 2.3x, a slight decline from 2.4x in 2024. This coverage ratio should increase over time as synergies from Lexmark and Itzavi start to boost operating results. Management projects that Xerox will generate $250 million in excess cash this year, in addition to the current cash balance of $300 million, and we would expect next year's figure to be higher. We expect Xerox will have no trouble refinancing its $125 million bond issue that comes due June 30, 2026, and its $350 million maturing on November 15, 2026. After these bonds are repaid or refinanced, the company has no debt coming due until August 2028, nearly 3 years away. This means Xerox should have plenty of time to derive the benefits from the Lexmark and Itzavi acquisitions. How Xerox's pension liability plays into finances. We note that on June 30, 2025, Xerox had $1.24 billion in liabilities for employees' pension and retirement health benefits. Since the cost of paying down these liabilities is included in operating expenses and reduces operating profit, it would be double counting to treat pension and post-retirement benefit liabilities as debt. Valuation. The Xerox 3.75% bonds maturing March 15, 2030, are trading at roughly a 50% discount from their face value of $1,000. At this low dollar price, the valuation needed to break even, after paying the secured debt in full, is $2.9 billion. As the bond price rises to full face value, the break-even rises until it reaches $4.4 billion, Xerox's total debt adjusted for cash. We estimate that Xerox's operating income in 2026 will fall somewhere in the range of $700 million to $1 billion. The low end, $700 million, assumes results deteriorate from $873 million in 2024 and includes no benefit at all for synergies related to the Lexmark and Itzavi acquisitions. The high end of $1 billion assumes results comparable to 2024 as well as synergies of $143 million, which is roughly in line with management's expectations. We use valuation multiples from 4.5x to 6.5x, which we consider appropriate for a business in a lackluster industry. We assume that all secured debt is repaid in full, with the bonds entitled to the remainder. Even under the low-end assumptions of $700 million in operating profit and a valuation multiple of 4.5x, the bonds would be worth $571, roughly 20% higher than the current price of $470. For all other combinations, the bonds are worth more. For instance, at a multiple of 5.0x, the bonds are fully covered by just under $900 million in operating profit. At 5.5x, the company would need to generate operating profit of close to $850 million to be valued in full. Although we are not recommending Xerox stock in this report, we note that at the high end of the range for operating profit and a multiple of 6.5x, Xerox stock would be worth roughly $16.80 per share, as compared with a current price of $3.63. Bond details. Xerox's 3.75% convertible bonds mature March 15, 2030, and are senior unsecured obligations of the company. As of June 30, 2025, the company had a total of $4.4 billion in debt, adjusted for cash. Roughly $1.7 billion of this sum is secured by various assets. In a bankruptcy proceeding, which we do not envision, the secured debt would be paid first, in full, before these unsecured bonds would be paid. Value above $1.7 billion goes to the holders of Xerox's $2.7 billion of unsecured bonds, including this issue of 3.75% bonds. Any value left over after paying off all debt belongs to shareholders. We like Xerox's 3.75% convertible bonds based on their expected annual return of 23.3%. We would view any upside from the bond's convertibility feature as gravy. The Xerox 3.75% bonds are convertible into stock. On March 15, 2030, the bonds will receive the higher of their $1,000 face value or the value of 48 shares of XRX stock. This means that if the stock rises from its current price of $3.63 to more than $20.84 per share on or before March 2030, you'll end up receiving more than $1,000 per bond. With Xerox's stock currently trading at $3.63 per share, we consider it a long shot that this conversion feature will increase the bond's payout at maturity. That said, in the event that management meets or exceeds its expectations over the next few years, and history calls for skepticism, it's not inconceivable that these bonds could end up being worth more than their $1,000 face value. If, against the odds, the share price does exceed $20.84 before the bond matures on March 15, 2030, bondholders can convert the bond into stock. Here is the Xerox stock price chart going back to 1979. We note that XRX hit an all-time split-adjusted high of $155.60 per share in June 1999, and last traded above $20.84 in March 2022. Risks. Xerox's bonds are subject to a variety of risks, including Xerox's core businesses of copiers and print management have declined over an extended period and are likely to remain soft going forward. This weak baseline increases pressure to grow by acquisition. The company's track record in making acquisitions is spotty. Xerox may encounter difficulties integrating its Savvy and Lexmark into its operations. Although the potential savings have been specified in detail, the company may have trouble achieving the anticipated benefits. The copier and print services markets are highly competitive. Many of the company's competitors are large and well-financed. The company has a high level of debt. Although the company has generated positive cash flow for many years, a sharp decline in demand, for instance in the event of a prolonged recession in the US or worldwide, could potentially cause Xerox to face tightening liquidity. The price of Xerox's 3.75% has been and is likely to remain volatile. Recommendation. We recommend purchasing Xerox Holdings 3.75% convertible bond maturing March 15, 2030, up to a price of $500, which would equate to an annual yield of roughly 21.9%. Action to take. Buy Xerox 3.75% bond maturing March 15, 2030. CUSIP hashtag 98421 May 6, up to $500. Martin Fridson. Porter & Company. Stevenson, Maryland. Thank you for being a paid subscriber to Distressed Investing. We hope you enjoyed this audio issue. Check our website for the full issue, which includes instructions on how to purchase today's recommendation.